Chapter 7. The Executive Branch. Why it matters. The framers did not state specifically in the Constitution what the role of the president should be. The nation's first president, George Washington, established many traditions that shaped the presidency. Every president since Washington has followed and built upon these traditions, refining the president's role within the government. Big ideas. Section 1. The President and Vice President. The Constitution gives the executive branch the power to execute or implement the law. The president holds one of the most powerful and important elective offices in the world. Section 2. The President's Job. The Constitution gives the executive branch the power to execute or implement the law. The president fills many different roles. Section 3. Making Foreign Policy. Under our federal system, the executive, legislative, and judicial branches share the responsibility of governing the nation. The President and Congress have important roles in making foreign policy. Section 4. Presidential Advisors and Executive Agencies. The Constitution gives the executive branch the power to execute or implement the law. Thousands of employees and advisors help the President. Section 1. The President and Vice President. Real-world civics. Any child born in the United States can grow up to be president. It is considered to be the most powerful job in the world. Would you want it? Barack Obama did. After serving in the U.S. Senate representing Illinois, he decided to run for the presidency in 2008. After becoming the nominee of his party, he chose Senator Joseph Biden as his running mate. Together, they campaigned in a history-making election. Barack Obama succeeded at becoming the first African-American elected to the U.S. presidency. The Office of the President. Main idea. As the head of the executive branch of our federal government, the president holds one of the most powerful and important elective offices in the world. Civics and you. What qualifications do you think a president should have? Read this section to find out what Americans have come to expect from their presidents. The president heads the executive branch of the United States government. The presidency is the top political job in the country. Because of the power and global influence of the United States, the president is generally considered to hold the most important job in the world. Our country's first president was George Washington. Just as the nation has grown tremendously since that time, so has the office of the presidency. The U.S. Constitution lists only three rules about who, by law, can become President of the United States. A person must be 1, at least 35 years old, 2, a native-born American citizen, and 3, a resident of the United States for at least 14 years. Characteristics of Presidents. Almost all our presidents have shared similar characteristics. So far, every American president has been male. All but one have been Protestant Christians. Most have had a college education. Many have been lawyers. Most came from states with large populations. Only in the past few decades has the presidency become a possibility for a wider group of Americans. John F. Kennedy became the first Catholic president in 1960. In 1984, the Democratic Party nominated Geraldine Ferraro as its first female vice presidential candidate. In 2000, the Democrats nominated Connecticut Senator Joseph Lieberman as the first Jewish candidate for vice president. The first African-American president, Barack Obama, was elected in 2008. Presidential elections. Presidential elections take place every 4 years, in years evenly divisible by the number 4, for example, 2000, 2004, and 2008. The Constitution provides for an indirect method of election called the Electoral College. The Constitution says that each state shall appoint electors, who then vote for one of the major candidates. Although the ballot will display or show the names of the presidential candidates, you are actually voting for a list of presidential electors pledged to that candidate. Each state has as many electoral votes as the total of its U.S. senators and representatives. Washington, D.C. has 3 electoral votes. The Electoral College includes 538 electors. In almost every state, the Electoral College is a winner-take-all system. Even if a candidate wins the popular vote by just a tiny majority, that candidate usually gets all of the state's electoral votes. Thus, the electoral votes of a few small states can decide the outcome or result of a close election. To be elected, a candidate must receive half of the 538 electoral votes available, or 270 votes to win. If no candidate gets an Electoral College majority, the House of Representatives votes on the candidates, with each state delegation casting only a single vote. This has happened twice, in 1800 and in 1824. Although the winning presidential candidate is usually announced on the same evening as the popular election, the formal election by the Electoral College does not take place until December. The electors meet in each state capital to cast their ballots. Then Congress officially counts the electoral votes. Term of office. Presidents serve 4-year terms. Originally, the Constitution placed no limits on how many terms a president could serve. The nation's first president, George Washington, served for 8 years and then refused to run for a third term. Following Washington's example, no president served more than 2 terms until 1940, when Franklin D. Roosevelt ran for and won a third term. In 1944, Roosevelt won a 4th term. The 22nd Amendment, ratified in 1951, limits each president to 2 elected terms in office, or a maximum of 10 years if the presidency began during another president's term. Salary and benefits. The president receives a salary of $400,000 per year, plus money for expenses and travel. The president lives and works in the White House. A domestic staff of more than 80 people takes care of the president's family. The president has use of Camp David, an estate in the Catakin Mountains of Maryland, about 60 miles north of Washington, D.C. When presidents travel, they command a fleet of special cars, helicopters, and airplanes. For long trips, the president uses Air Force One, a specially equipped jet. The vice president. The vice president is elected with the president through the Electoral College system. The qualifications for the office are the same as those for the presidency. The Constitution gives little authority to the vice president. Article 1 states that the vice president shall preside over the Senate and vote in that body in case of a tie. If the president dies, is removed from office, falls seriously ill, or resigns, the vice president becomes president. Reading check. Identifying. What is the maximum number of years that a U.S. president can serve? Presidential succession. Main idea. The office of the president has an established order of succession. Civics and you. Do you know what happens when a president dies or is forced to leave office? Read to find out how the Constitution answers this question. In 1841, William Henry Harrison became the first president to die in office. His death raised many questions. While the Constitution says that the vice president should assume the powers and duties of the presidency, no one was sure what that meant. Should the vice president remain as vice president while doing the president's job? Should the vice president become president? Should a special election be called to elect a new president? Vice President John Tyler settled these questions. He declared himself president, took the oath of office, and served out the remainder of Harrison's term. Since Tyler's time, 8 other vice presidents have taken over the presidency following the death or resignation of a president. Presidential Succession Act. In 1947, Congress passed the Presidential Succession Act, which indicates the line of succession after the vice president. According to this law, if both the president and vice president die or leave office, the Speaker of the House becomes president. Next in line is the president pro tempore of the Senate, then the Secretary of State, and other members of the cabinet. 25th Amendment. Remaining questions about presidential succession were answered by the passage of a constitutional amendment. The 25th Amendment, ratified in 1967, says that if the president dies or leaves office, the vice president becomes president. The new president then chooses another vice president. Both the Senate and House of Representatives must approve the choice. This amendment also gives the vice president a role in determining whether a president is disabled and unable to do the job. Should that occur, the vice president would serve as acting president until the president is able to go back to work. The 25th Amendment has been used only 3 times. In 1973, Vice President Spiro Agnew resigned. President Richard Nixon replaced him with Gerald Ford, a representative from Michigan, and Congress approved the nomination. When Nixon resigned from the presidency in 1974, Ford became the new president. Ford then nominated Nelson A. Rockefeller, former governor of New York, to be his vice president. In 1985, President Ronald Reagan informed Congress that he would need to undergo surgery and would be unable to carry out his presidential duties. As a result, Vice President George H.W. Bush served as acting president for about 8 hours. Reading check, describing. What was the purpose of the 25th Amendment? Section 2. The President's Job. Real-World Civics. The President is the Commander-in-Chief of the U.S. Armed Forces. He or she is also one of the most important hosts of one of the most impressive houses in the world, the White House. The President must maintain good relationships with other world leaders and often entertains dignitaries. Here, President Bill Clinton hosts Spain's King Juan Carlos in 2000, engaging in a ceremonial troop review of U.S. Marines. The South Lawn of the White House is a popular location for such honorary troop reviews and other greetings of foreign leaders. Constitutional Powers. Main Idea. The source for the President's authority is Article 2 of the Constitution. Civics and You. What qualifications or characteristics do you think a president should have? Which of the recent presidents, if any, have had these qualifications or characteristics? Fewer than 50 men have been able to say what it feels like to be President of the United States. Some former presidents' thoughts are revealing. The presidency has made every man who occupied it, no matter how small, bigger than he was, and no matter how big, not big enough for its demands. Lyndon B. Johnson. Duties of the President. Although the President is the head of just one of the three branches of government, he or she, with the exception of the Vice President, is the only official of the federal government elected by the entire nation. As a result, the President stands as a symbol not only of the federal government, but of the entire nation as well. Even so, the 38th President, Gerald Ford, pointed out that not even the President can do the impossible. You know, the President of the United States is not a magician who can wave a wand or sign a paper that will instantly end a war, cure a recession, or make bureaucracy disappear. Gerald Ford. The President is the most powerful public official in the United States. The U.S. Constitution is the basis of the President's power. Article 2 says, Executive power shall be invested in a president. Thus, the president's main job is to execute or carry out the laws passed by Congress. The Constitution also gives the president the power to veto or reject bills passed in Congress, call Congress into special session, serve as commander-in-chief of the armed forces, receive leaders and other officials of foreign countries, make treaties with other countries with Senate approval, appoint heads of executive agencies, federal court judges, ambassadors, and other top government officials, also subject to Senate approval, pardon or reduce the penalties against people convicted of federal crimes. Because the Constitution requires or calls for the President to give Congress information about the State of the Union, the President gives several speeches to Congress each year. The most important is the State of the Union address, in which the President discusses the most important issues facing the nation. The constitutional duties of the nation's first president, George Washington, and those of a modern president are much the same. For example, the Constitution makes the president the commander-in-chief of the nation's armed forces. In Washington's administration, this meant calling out a militia of 15,000 volunteers. Today, the president oversees a military divided into five major units and makes the decision on how to deploy troops stationed around the world. Reading check. Analyzing. What are the powers of the President as expressed in the Constitution? Roles of the President. Main Idea. The President fills many roles that are important to the functioning of the United States government. Civics and You. The Constitution grants broad powers to the President. Do you think the President has too much power? Read about the President's many roles. The Constitution holds one person, the President, responsible for carrying out the duties of the executive branch. As the nation has grown, the duties and responsibilities of the executive branch have grown. Chief Executive. The most important job of the president is to carry out the nation's laws. To do this, the president is in charge of 15 cabinet departments and the approximately 3 million civilians who work for the federal government. The president appoints the heads of the cabinet departments and of other large government agencies with the Senate's approval. Use of executive orders. Presidents have several tools to influence how laws are carried out. One is the executive order. An executive order is a rule or command that has the force of law,
Only Congress has the authority to make laws. Issuing executive orders, however, is generally considered to fall under the President's constitutional duty to take care that the laws are faithfully executed. Many executive orders deal with simple administrative problems. Some, however, have had a great impact or influence. President Harry S. Truman, for instance, used an executive order in 1948 to racially integrate the armed forces. This gave Americans of all races the opportunity to serve in the armed forces. Power of appointment. The Constitution gives the President the power to appoint judges to the Supreme Court and other federal courts. This is an important power because the Supreme Court has the final authority to determine whether a law is constitutional. Because the power to interpret laws is important, most presidents try to appoint Supreme Court justices who share views similar to their own. The Constitution also gives the President the power to grant pardons. A pardon is a declaration of forgiveness and freedom from punishment. The President may also issue a reprieve in order to delay a person's punishment until a higher court can hear the case, or grant amnesty, a pardon toward a group of people. Chief Diplomat. The President directs the foreign policy or strategy of the United States, making key decisions about how the United States acts toward other countries in the world. Commander-in-Chief. The Constitution makes the President Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces of the United States. This role gives presidents the ability to back up their foreign policy decisions with force if necessary. The President is in charge of the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, and Coast Guard. The top commanders of all these branches of service are subordinate to the President. The President shares with Congress the power to make war. The Constitution gives Congress the power to declare war, but only the President can order American soldiers into battle. Congress has declared war 5 times. The War of 1812, the Mexican War, the Spanish-American War, World War I, and World War II. Presidents, however, have sent troops into action overseas more than 150 times since 1789. For example, although Congress never declared war in Korea or in Vietnam, American troops were involved in conflicts in those countries because they were sent there by U.S. presidents. In 1973, after the Vietnam War, Congress passed the War Powers Resolution. According to this law, the President must notify Congress within 48 hours when troops are sent into battle. These troops must be brought home after 60 days unless Congress gives its approval for them to remain longer or declares war. Legislative Leader. Only members of Congress have the power to introduce bills for consideration, but in practice, Congress expects the executive branch to propose the legislation it would like to see enacted. Every president has a legislative program. These are new laws that the president wants Congress to pass. The President makes speeches to build support for this program and meets with key senators and representatives to try to persuade them to support the proposed laws. The President and Congress have often disagreed over what new laws Congress should adopt. One reason for this is that presidents represent the entire United States while members of Congress represent only the people of their states or districts. The difference in the lengths of time that presidents and members of Congress can hold office also contributes to this conflict. While presidents can serve no more than 2 elected terms, members of Congress can be elected over and over again for decades. Therefore, many members of Congress may not want to move as quickly on programs as the president does. Head of State. The president is the living symbol of the nation. In this role, the president aids diplomacy by greeting visiting kings and queens, prime ministers, and other foreign leaders. The president also carries out ceremonial functions for Americans, such as lighting the national Christmas tree and giving medals to the country's heroes. Economic Leader. Every president tries to help the country's economy prosper. Voters expect the president to deal with such problems as unemployment, rising prices, and high taxes. One key task the president must accomplish each year as economic leader is to plan the federal government's budget. The president meets with budget officials to decide what programs to support and what programs to cut back. Budget decisions have a great effect on the national economy. Party Leader. The president is generally regarded as the leader of his or her political party. Members of the president's party work hard to elect the president. In turn, the president gives speeches to help fellow party members who are running for office as members of Congress, governors, and mayors. The president also helps the party raise money. Reading Check, Defining. What is a President's Legislative Program? Section 3, Making Foreign Policy, Real World Civics. The President's long arm of foreign policy stretches around the world in the form of U.S. ambassadors. The President cannot be everywhere spreading goodwill, so he or she appoints ambassadors to major countries to maintain diplomatic relationships with other governments. Great Britain has been one of the United States' closest allies. Here, Prince Charles, accompanied by U.S. Ambassador William S. Farish, signs a book of condolences following the terrorist attacks on New York City and the Pentagon in 2001. Ambassadorships are often awarded to people for their hard work and support of the President. The President and Foreign Policy. Main idea. As Commander-in-Chief and Chief Diplomat, the President leads the nation's armed forces and directs U.S. foreign policy. Civics and you. Just as the President very often has to deal with people outside our country, you have to deal with people outside your family. Think about times when that has been a challenge for you. What did you do? A nation's plan for dealing with other nations is called its foreign policy. The President directs the foreign policy of the United States, making the key decisions about the relations the United States has with other countries in the world. The primary goal of American foreign policy is national security, the ability to keep the country safe from attack or harm. This goal is vital. No government can effectively meet other important goals, such as better health care or cleaning up the environment, if the nation is under attack. Another important goal is international trade. In today's economy, trade with other nations is vital to economic prosperity. Trade creates markets for American products and jobs for American workers. A third goal is promoting world peace. Even a war far from the United States can disrupt trade and put national security at risk. When other nations are at peace, the United States runs no risk of being drawn into a foreign war. A fourth goal of foreign policy is to promote democracy around the world. Promoting democracy and basic human rights in other countries encourages peace and thus helps protect our own national security. I make American foreign policy, President Harry S. Truman declared in 1948. The President is indeed a very important foreign policy decision maker. Americans and others throughout the world look to the President to represent our country in foreign affairs. Foreign policy bureaucracy. The President, along with White House assistants, works with a large foreign policy bureaucracy in the executive branch. This bureaucracy includes the State Department, the Defense Department, the Central Intelligence Agency, and the National Security Council. These agencies assist the President in foreign affairs. They can carry out presidential decisions around the world and give the President valuable information. At the same time, presidents must make the final decision. President Harry S. Truman noted, "No one who has not had the responsibility can really understand what it is like to be president, not even his closest aides. He is never allowed to forget that he is president." Harry S. Truman. Congress versus the President. The President is chief diplomat and commander-in-chief, but Congress has the power to declare war, to prohibit certain military actions, and to spend or withhold money for defense. The Constitution does not clearly spell out how the legislative and the executive branches can use their powers. As a result, there has always been competition between Congress and the President over who controls foreign policy. In this struggle, one branch or the other has controlled foreign policy at various times. After World War II, Congress lost much of its control over foreign policy to the President. Then, in the late 1960s and early 1970s, during the Vietnam conflict, Congress regained some of its war powers. In starting the American War on Global Terrorism in 2001, President George W. Bush tipped the balance back toward the presidency. Tools of foreign policy. The President and Congress have several approaches they can use to carry out American foreign policy. These methods or procedures include creating treaties, appointing ambassadors, and directing foreign aid, international trade, and military forces. Treaties and executive agreements. Formal agreements between the governments of two or more countries are called treaties. Some treaties are based on defense. One of the most important is the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO, a mutual defense treaty between the United States, Canada, and the nations of Europe. The Senate must approve a treaty by a two-thirds vote. However, the President can bypass the Senate by making an executive agreement. This is an agreement between the President and the leader of another country. Most agreements deal with fairly routine matters. Appointing ambassadors. An official representative of a country's government is an ambassador. The president appoints about 150 ambassadors who must be confirmed by the Senate. Ambassadors are sent only to those countries where the United States recognizes or accepts the legal existence of the government. If the government of a certain country is thought to hold power illegally, the president can refuse to recognize that government. Foreign aid. Foreign aid is money, food, military assistance, or other supplies given to help other countries. One of this nation's greatest examples of foreign aid was the Marshall Plan, a program created to help restore Western Europe after World War II. International trade. As the leader of a great economic power, the president can make agreements with other nations about what products may be traded and the rules for such trading. Sometimes trade measures include trade sanctions or efforts to punish another nation by imposing trade barriers. Another punishing tool is the embargo, which is an agreement among a group of nations that prohibits them from trading with a target nation. Congress takes the lead in other areas such as tariffs, taxes on imported goods, and membership in international trade groups such as the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, and the World Trade Organization, WTO. Military force. As Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces, presidents may use the military to carry out some foreign policy decisions. Numerous times in the history of the United States, presidents have sent troops to troublesome spots on the globe, even though Congress had not declared war. This is a powerful tool of foreign policy, but one that must be used with great care. President George Washington summoned troops to put down the Whiskey Rebellion in 1794. President Bill Clinton ordered cruise missiles to be launched at terrorist facilities in Afghanistan and Sudan in 1998. In 2003, President George W. Bush ordered the American Armed Forces to invade Iraq and remove the nation's dictator, Saddam Hussein. Reading check, concluding. What foreign policy tools does the president have to deal with international terrorism? Section 4. Presidential Advisors and Executive Agencies. Real-World Civics. What is the proper role of the First Lady? At one time, the spouse of the president served as a ceremonial hostess at White House events. Eleanor Roosevelt changed all that when she became active in political causes during her husband's presidencies in the 1940s. Jacqueline Kennedy, Lady Bird Johnson, Rosalind Carter, and Barbara Bush continued to revolutionize the role of the First Lady. Here, President George H.W. Bush celebrates Thanksgiving with the U.S. Marines in Saudi Arabia during the Persian Gulf War in 1990. Now, First Ladies are seen as advisors to their husbands, as well as having their own agendas as public figures. Organization of the Federal Branch. Main idea. The executive branch is made up of the top advisors and assistants who help the president carry out major duties. Civics and you. The executive branch has grown tremendously over the years. What advantages and disadvantages can you see in having a large executive staff? The executive branch is organized like a pyramid. The president, as chief executive, is at the very top of the pyramid. Directly below the president are a number of powerful officials, usually hand-picked by the president. Below these are many levels of lesser officials and managers. In general, the people at the top of the pyramid are the ones who set goals and make important decisions. In 1801, President Thomas Jefferson did his job with the help of a few advisors, a messenger, and a part-time secretary. Today, thousands of highly trained specialists, secretaries, and clerks assist the president. Most of these people work in the Executive Office of the President, EOP. These people are often referred to as a president's administration. Franklin D. Roosevelt's administration created the EOP in 1939 to help the president do his job. The office has been growing ever since. Currently, it has about 2,000 employees and a budget of more than $100 million. The Executive Office. The core of the Executive Office of the President is the White House Office, which is comprised of about 500 people who work directly for the President. Among them are 10 to 12 people who serve as the President's closest political advisors. The most powerful among this group is the Chief of Staff. Other top advisors are the Deputy Chief of Staff and the Press Secretary. The press secretary provides the public with news about and statements from the president. As a group, such advisors make up the White House staff. Management and Budget. The Office of Management and Budget, OMB, prepares the federal budget and monitors or oversees spending in hundreds of government agencies. The director of the OMB works closely with the president. The federal budget is the clearest statement of the administration's plans and goals for the coming year. National Security Council, NSC. The National Security Council, NSC, helps the President direct United States military and foreign policy. It handles matters affecting the security of the country. It includes the Vice President, the Secretaries of State and Defense, and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, which includes the top commander from each of the armed services. The National Security Advisor heads the NSC. The NSC also supervises the Central Intelligence Agency, CIA, which gathers information about the governments of other countries. Other offices. The Office of Administration provides administrative services to the executive offices of the President. The office also responds to individuals who are seeking records under the Freedom of Information Act. The Council of Economic Advisers, CEA, helps the President carry out the role or position of economic leader. The President names the CEA's members and the Senate approves them. The CEA's primary duty involves giving the President advice about complex economic matters such as employment, inflation, and foreign trade. Reading check. Identifying. What are the duties of a President's press secretary?
The Cabinet. Main idea. The Cabinet is an advisory group chosen by the President to help accomplish the work of the executive branch. Civics and you. Some presidents have followed their cabinet's opinion on many matters. Other presidents have not. Do you think strong presidents rely more or less on their cabinet's advice? The EOP is only a small part of the president's administration. Many more people work in the cabinet. The cabinet is a group of presidential advisors that includes the heads of the 15 top-level executive departments. The head of the Department of Justice is called the Attorney General. All the other department heads are called secretaries. The President may also ask the Vice President and other top officials to join the Cabinet. Department of Homeland Security. On November 25, 2002, President Bush signed the Homeland Security Act of 2002. The act created the Department of Homeland Security to improve the nation's defenses against terrorism and coordinate counterterrorism intelligence. It is the first new department established since the Department of Veterans Affairs was created in 1989. Cabinet responsibilities. As cabinet members, the secretaries advise the president on issues related to their departments. The Secretary of Agriculture, for instance, might keep the president and White House staff informed about matters of concern to American farmers.
No mention of the cabinet appears in the Constitution. Instead, this body developed when George Washington began to meet regularly with the heads of the first four executive departments. These were the Attorney General and the Secretaries of State, War, and the Treasury. The Cabinet meets whenever the President determines that it is necessary. This may be as often as once a week or hardly at all. Many presidents have not relied heavily on their cabinets and have felt free to ignore cabinet advice. As heads of executive agencies, these department secretaries must spend most of their time coordinating those departments' activities. Department heads of the Cabinet must be approved by the Senate. Vice President and the First Lady. Most presidents have delegated little authority to their vice presidents. Recently, however, some have tried to give their vice presidents more responsibility. Vice President Al Gore, for example, served as a close advisor to President Bill Clinton on environmental issues. And Vice President Dick Cheney advised President George W. Bush closely on foreign policy issues. The Constitution does not mention the spouse of a president. First ladies, though, have served the country in many ways. Eleanor Roosevelt worked tirelessly for the young and the disadvantaged. Nancy Reagan spoke out for drug abuse prevention. Hillary Clinton worked to improve health care for all Americans. And Laura Bush promoted education and reading. Today, first ladies have an office in the White House. Reading check. Stating. When does the cabinet meet? The federal bureaucracy. Main idea. The federal bureaucracy has grown over the years and assumes an important role in making public policy. Civics and you. With every new administration, new people are named to hold positions within the federal bureaucracy. Why might it be a problem for new people to always be taking these jobs? Below the cabinet departments are hundreds of agencies that deal with everything from setting standards for the hot dogs you eat to running the space shuttle program. About 3 million civilians work in these many departments and agencies. Taken together, the agencies and employees of the executive branch are often called the federal bureaucracy. The people who work for these organizations are called bureaucrats or civil servants. The bureaucracy in action. the executive branch of government must carry out the many programs that Congress has created to serve the American people. Executive departments and agencies do this by performing three basic jobs. First, they turn new laws into action by deciding how to apply the laws to daily life. When Congress writes new laws, it often uses very general language. Federal agencies then must develop specific rules and procedures to put the laws into practice. Second, departments and agencies administer the day-to-day operations of the federal government. Agencies deliver the mail, collect taxes, send out Social Security checks, and perform thousands of other services. Regulatory functions. Third, with authority from Congress, federal agencies regulate various activities. They regulate or police the activities of broadcasting companies, labor unions, banks, airlines, nuclear power plants, and many other enterprises and organizations. In doing these jobs, federal agencies help shape government policy. By deciding how to run a government program or what to do in a certain situation, federal agencies often determine what government policy will be. Independent agencies. The executive branch includes hundreds of independent agencies. They are called independent because they are not part of the cabinet. In general, however, these agencies can be divided into three types: executive agencies, government corporations, and regulatory commissions. Executive agencies. These are independent agencies responsible for dealing with certain specialized areas within the government. The National Aeronautics and Space Administration, NASA, is an example. It operates the United States space program. Government corporations. More than 50 independent agencies are government corporations. These are like private businesses, except that the government, rather than individuals, owns and operates them. With Senate approval, the President chooses a board of directors and a general manager to run each corporation. Like private businesses, these corporations charge fees for their services and products, but they are not supposed to make a profit. The United States Postal Service, for example, is a government corporation. Regulatory boards and commissions. These units differ from other independent agencies. They do not have to report to the President, who appoints the members but cannot fire them. Only Congress can remove them through impeachment. Regulatory commissions are supposed to protect the public. They make and enforce rules for certain industries or groups. For instance, the Federal Communications Commission, FCC, makes broadcasting rules for the nation's television and radio stations. Government workers. Every executive department has thousands of employees. The top leadership jobs generally go to political appointees, people whom the President has chosen because they have proven executive ability or were important supporters of the President's election campaign. Their employment usually ends when the President leaves office. About 90% of all national government employees are civil service workers. Unlike political appointees, civil service workers usually have permanent employment. These are people ranging from clerks to doctors and lawyers, employed by the federal government through the civil service system. The practice of hiring government workers on the basis of open competitive examinations and merit. Development of the civil service system. Originally, the executive branch was small enough for presidents to be able to choose most of their employees personally. Early presidents tried to appoint the most qualified people to federal jobs. They also, however, tended to appoint members of their own party who shared similar views. The spoils system. Before 1883, a great many federal jobs fell under the spoils system. In this system, government jobs went to people as a reward for their political support. Each newly elected president would sweep out most of the old federal workers and replace them with his own political supporters and friends. The idea was, to the victor belong the spoils, jobs. Public dissatisfaction with abuses of the spoils system and public outrage over the assassination of President James Garfield in 1881 by a man who was refused a job under the system, led Congress to pass the Pendleton Act. The Merit System. The Pendleton Act, also known as the Civil Service Reform Act of 1883, created the civil service system and placed limits on the number of jobs a new president could hand out to friends and backers. The Office of Personnel Management, OPM, directs the civil service system today. It sets standards for federal jobs and it gives demanding written tests to people who want those jobs. The civil service system is a merit system. Government officials hire new workers from lists of people who have passed the tests or otherwise met civil service standards. Reading check. Describing. What is the purpose of regulatory commissions? Time reports. the White House. An intricate model takes visitors behind the scenes at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Described by former President Gerald Ford as the best public housing in the world and by former President Harry S. Truman as a glamorous prison, the White House was first occupied by President John Adams in 1800. 2 centuries later, the White House is a village of 6,000 busy souls. On a typical day, the President and First Lady, journalists, cooks, cops, gardeners, and tourists operate in harmony on 18 acres. In 1962, John and Jan Zweifel of Orlando, Florida, set out to bring the White House to the American people by constructing the detailed model shown at right. Except for the location of the library, which was pushed forward for show purposes, the Zweifels' White House is a faithful recreation of the original, down to TVs, furniture, and paintings. The Zweifels contact the White House every few weeks to find out if anything has changed. The 60-foot by 20-foot, 10-ton model, which includes the east and west wings, not shown, took more than 500,000 hours to construct and cost more than $1 million. It is built on a scale of 1 inch to 1 foot. 1. Sitting room. Generally claimed by the First Lady, this room has an unusual distinction. It was allocated one of the building's first indoor toilets in 1801. 2. Master bedroom. Nancy Reagan, who served as First Lady from 1981 to 1989, decorated this bedroom in hand-painted paper that was imported from China. 3. President's study. Franklin Delano Roosevelt used this study as a bedroom. The Reagans liked to have quiet dinners here in front of the television. 4. Yellow oval room. One of the most historic rooms in the house, it took on the color yellow during the tenure of First Lady Dolly Madison. 5. Treaty room. Originally a large bedroom, this room served as Bill Clinton's office in the residence. 6. Lincoln bedroom. Abraham Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation here. 7. Lincoln sitting room. William McKinley's war room during the Spanish-American War. 8. State dining room. Gilbert Stuart's portrait of George Washington, which was later used on the $1 bill, hung here when the British torched the mansion in 1814. The portrait survived the fire. 9. Red room. John Adams's breakfast room was where Rutherford B. Hayes took the oath of office in 1877. 10. Blue room, where Grover Cleveland married Frances Folsom in 1886. 11. Green room. Thomas Jefferson's dining room is now used for receptions. 12. East room. The largest room in the mansion, it was used by First Lady Abigail Adams to dry the family wash. 13. Library. Placed here by the replica designers, the presidential library is actually located behind the Vermeer room. 14. Map room. Decorated with Chippendale furniture imported from England, this room was inspired by Winston Churchill's World War II map room. 15. Diplomatic reception room. Site from which FDR broadcast his fireside chats, though the fireplace at that time was fake. 16. China room. Edith Wilson, First Lady from 1915 to 1921, used this area to display China. 17. Vermeer room. This room takes its name from a display of vermeil, gilded silver. A long road. The Zweifels' quest to create a replica of the White House took decades. After going on hundreds of public tours of the mansion, they finally persuaded President Gerald Ford to let them look behind the scenes.